Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Open Mic Session. Today's topic is WebSphere Application Server System Management. My name is Joseph Lam, and today's session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide number 2. In today's Open Mic session, we will start off by introducing to you our panel of experts for today. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to WebSphere Application Server System Management. Next, our panel of experts will answer questions that were pre-submitted to us via email. After that, we will open the lines for question and answer period. Finally, the session will end with a summary of the Open Mic session given by our panel of experts. Slide number 3. At this time, I would like to introduce to you our panel of experts for today's call. Our panel consists of Ajit Jariwala from WebSphere Application Server L2 Support.
Hi, my name is Ajit Jariwala, and I'm from WebSphere Application Server Level 2 Support.
Next we have Ganesan Kaviparet from WebSphere Application Server L2 Support.
Hello everyone. Welcome to this Open Mic session. And my name is Ganesan Karupaya. I work for WebSphere Level 2 Support and have like past 7 years experience starting from WebSphere 3.5 to WebSphere V7. And I hope like this session will be useful to you. And thanks for joining.
Then we have Preston Law from WebSphere Application Server L2 Support.
Hi, this is Preston Law. I work in Level 2 WebSphere Application Server Support for about the past 2 years in the scripting, security, systems management, and deployment areas. Hopefully, we can answer any questions you guys have out there.
Then we have Randall Anders, WebSphere Application Server L2 Support.
Good morning, everyone. Again, I'm Randall Anders, and I've been on the Level 2 support team here for going on 2 years now, again, where we focus on system management issues, security, scripting, deployment, application console issues. So we hope that this open mic session will be very beneficial for all of you. Thank you.
And finally, we have Vikram Tomandru from WebSphere Application Server L2 Support.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Vikram Tomandru. I work in WebSphere Level 2 support. I have been working in the support for the last 5 to 6 years, where we are specialized in the system management component area as well as security. In today's open mic session, we are available to address, you know, any of your questions that you have in the system management area. So I hope this is something useful for your daily activity when you are working on the WebSphere administration. Thank you.
Thank you, Vikram. Moving on to slide number 4. Before we get to the question and answer period, we would like to give you a technical overview of the topic from Vikram, one of our panel of experts for today. Please go ahead, Vikram.
Again, this is Vikram Tomandru. I work in the WebSphere Level 2 support. I would like to talk about this WebSphere system management area, like, you know, just for a couple of minutes. In brief, what is this system management and what we include into the system management concept? This system management is not a single component in the WebSphere application server product. More of we say it's an architecture. So basically, any resource in the WebSphere application server product managed by the JMX MBeans, which means any operation that you do, like internally, we use this JMX MBean concept for any communication in the WebSphere application server product. When I say JMX, MBean, these are not fancy enterprise Java beans. These are just simple Java beans. In the system management area, we include following list of components, such as any scripting tool, for example, start server, stop server, or WS admin scripting tool, and the WebSphere administrative console, where you can perform any kind of administration using graphical user interface. Along with that, configuration management, so when you do any kind of, you know, when you install the product or when you do any kind of configuration changes, we store all that information into the configuration folder. So even this configuration management is part of the system management. And the last one is application management. So when you deploy or when you manage any operation on your application level, yes, yeah, this is application management is part of the system management. So in today's session, we are available to address your questions in the system management component area. So feel free to ask any questions that you have. Thank you.
Thanks, Vikram. We will now begin our question and answer session with questions that were pre-submitted to us ahead of time before the webcast. I will now move on to slide number 6, and we will now hand the presentation over to our panel of experts.
Hi, this is Preston Law. I will answer the first question. Question number 1, how can I best enable tracing during a specific task or time frame without having to restart the server? This is something we get a lot in support when we want to trace a specific area during any task you might perform, such as deployment, any kind of area in the console, pretty much anything where you're having a problem and we need more information. So if you go into the console, there is an area for logs and traces, and in there you can set the trace string. If you set that trace string in the configuration tab, you have to perform a restart before you actually get the tracing to start running. But there also is a runtime tab. So if you set the trace string in the runtime tab, it will automatically start tracing the string that you have input into the console as soon as you click OK or apply. The other way, which I like to do, is with scripting, because you can just enter in your new trace string and have it enabled. You can perform the task for your recreate, and then you can enter in the new string to disable the trace. So I'll give you that trace string, WSAdmin, in the group chat session of the web conference, but I'll also explain it. What you first do is you do an admin control complete object name, and you're going to get the trace service mbean for whatever server you're trying to enable tracing on, whether it be the deployment manager or server one or a node agent. Then what you do is you pass that through an admin control set attribute. You specify the trace ID that you received with the complete object name. You specify trace specification in quotes. And then you're going to set the actual trace string. At the end of the trace string, you put equals enabled or equals disabled for enabling or disabling that. And I will actually put that in the group chat right now in the web conference. And while I do that, we can move on to question number 2. So if we move over to slide number 7, we can move on to question number 2.
Hi, this is Ajit Jariwala, and I'll take that question number 2. When making configuration change in the WSAdmin, how can I verify the change made before saving the configuration to the master configuration? So basically, yes, if you are making config change via ISC console, you can check the WSTEM, which has created a workspace for session who logged in. And if you are running the WSAdmin script, which creates the workspace session using anonymous and a bunch of IDs, has a session ID which has the change made through the WSAdmin before you can propagate to the master configuration. So next question, please. Slide number 8.
Hi, this is Ganeshan. I'm going to answer the question number 3. The question is, what is the best way to deploy an application and to avoid user error? This is a very generic question, and my recommendation to all, and I do the same practice. When you first time install the application, please use the console install, and maybe your test box or anything like that, and get familiar with the steps involved. And then once it is successful, then maybe you can use the scripting or anything, or the JMX client or something like that. But please use the console so you get to aware of all the steps involved and you can avoid any user error. That's all. And we can move on to next question, please.
Hi, this is Vikram Tomendru again. I'm taking this question number four. The question is, how can application update operation be done with no downtime on the existing enterprise application running in a cluster? Yeah, this is the most of the time we hear this customer from many customers, especially when you have a cluster environment where you have your application running in a cluster which has multiple members that are spanned across different app server nodes. You don't want to, like, whenever you do application update onto your existing application, you don't want to have any downtime, especially if the application is running in a production environment. So starting from WebSphere 6.0.2x, so we have a new feature called rollout update. There are two ways. Either you can use WebSphere Administrative Console to perform this operation, or you can use WS Admin scripting tool. So let's say, for example, if you are using Administrative Console, so you need to deploy, you need to perform your application update operation, but before saving, once you deploy and at the end of that session, you will get a save operation. So before saving, that application configuration changes. So you will need to come back into the, again, manage application space. You will need to click on rollout update. What it does is it will save and synchronize changes to the nodes one after one, which means if you have multiple nodes involved, which means if you have your application running in two node environment, so we're going to stop all the cluster members on the node one, and we make the changes, we synchronize all the changes, we update the application, we restart the cluster members on the node one, and then we move to the secondary node. In the same way, if you are using WS Admin scripting tool, there is a command available. It is called update app on cluster. Like I said, you know, whatever you do using the administrative console, we need to do the same thing using WS Admin tool. You'll be updating your application before calling admin config save operation. You will need to call this update app on cluster command using admin task. So it does the same thing. It's going to synchronize your application changes to the nodes one after one. So it's going to stop all your cluster members on the node one, and then it will move to the secondary node or third node, how many nodes you have in the environment. We can move on to the question number five.
Hi, this is Ganesan again, and I'm going to answer this question. Question number five. The question is, in the WebSphere application server V7, the information center shows that V7 supports J2EE 1.3, but does not support Servlet 2.3 and JSP 1.2. My understanding is that J2EE 1.3 includes Servlet 2.3 and JSP 1.2. How can I comprehend it? Okay. The answer is, actually, WebSphere V7, it supports JSP 1.2 and 2.3, it is supported. And all this information, it is available in WebSphere V7 Information Center. And if you go to that specification, supported specification, then you can find all the information, the very specific to Servlet or EJB or JSP or anything for the developer looking for, you can find that information. Move on to question number six.
Hi, this is Randall Anders. And for question number six, we have, is there a definitive place to find out the available Jython commands for writing scripts? The command handling in the console doesn't cover very much, especially any of the more obscure stuff that I really want to know. Yes, you can. There's essentially three ways that you can go about finding these things out. I'm going to be posting into the group chat now one of the first ways that you can do this, and it's through really looking through the info center. You're going to find a lot of information, right? This first approach is simply by viewing the version 7 info center for the components and actions that have command assistance enabled, right? You'll see if you click on that link in the that I put in the group chat, That'll take you to a site or a page where it lists specifically all of the components and then in a table all the actions for those components that you can do. Right? And this kind of gives you a really good idea of what are the types of things that you can get command assistance for. For application components, web server components, for the channel framework, and it lists each action there as well. So that's a really good first step to take, I would say. Take a look at the Info Center with that article and see if that helps. The second thing that I'm posting into the group chat that also may be helpful is using the interactive mode in WSAdmin. Right, so maybe there's a task that you know already, or there's a command that you know, but you're not quite sure what the syntax is for that command. Using the interactive mode is a very good way to do that. It will, especially in version 7, with the version 7 application server, you can type the command and dash interactive as shown in the Info Center article, and it will pretty much list what's optional and what are the required parameters. And then at the bottom, it will generate that particular WSAdmin command for you after you finish entering all the options and entering all the data there. It generates the command for you so that you could save it if you needed to put that in a script for automation. A third way that I think is very beneficial, and this is one of the really nice things that we've added in version 7, is the use of what we call the Jython script library, right? And the Jython script library, pretty much what it is, it gives you the ability to call procedures out of the Jython script library. And if you look at that link in the Info Center, you'll find the Jython script library in version 7. In the version 7 WAS root, which is your normally, you know, WebSphere 7.0 app server, in that directory, there's a directory called script libraries. And then under the script libraries directory, there are several components. In fact, there's 6 components. There's application, resources, security, servers, system, and utilities. Underneath each one of those components is a version 7 directory, and then there's 2 or 3 class files. For instance, under the servers directory, there's admin cluster management and admin server management. And what that gives you is essentially, if you looked in that Jython file, for instance, for admin server management, it would give you probably some 50 different procedures that you can call, right? From everything from list servers to create application server, delete server, start all servers, just a myriad of things that you can call from there. And what this provides is you the ability to make really easy WSAdmin calls now, right? You can just say, for instance, admin server management dot start all servers, right? And then give the node name for all the node name where you want to start all these servers, and it will go through and it will start all of it for you. So I would suggest taking a look at that particular Info Center article, as it does have really good examples of how to use the Jython script library. It was something that was really requested in version 6.1, and so at the version 7.0 time frame, we put this out, and I think it's very, very helpful. And a lot of times we get questions even on version 6.1 about certain commands that aren't listed in the Info Center for 6.1. And what we tell them is, hey, go look at the version 7.0 Info Center, where we pointed you to the command assistance commands or this Jython script library, and see if that particular WSAdmin command will run on version 6.1, and it should. So those are 3 things I think that will help you in determining what specific Jython commands you can run for your scripts, and that will help in automating your server environment. And with that, we can move on to slide number 12.
Number 7, this is Ajit Jariwala speaking. And all the TTL settings and cache localhost settings redundant. If not, which API calls use which type of cache call? What should we use for WAS 6.1? The answer is yes. TTL and cache localhost one and same. There is a guide in Info Center which explains the tuning the TCP/IP, and I will definitely post it on a group chat. there was a defect also in JDK that was rolled out in 1.42 service release 5. There are a couple of tech node. One is for the high DNS traffic on a web application server. The tech node number is 1295471. And basically, the starting with the Java 1.41, the IP address is not cached by default. This caused delay and performance degradations. So if the application relies on this caching mechanism, since lookup is not performed each time, in RESTware runtime code, we call the inet address.getLocalhost method in several places, which then calls the DNS lookup request. So I think the best thing to do is you can set up a custom properties for caching, you know, like a com.ibm.cache localhost equal true. So that way it will cache the local host.
Thank you. Actually, that concludes our pre-submitted questions. And thank you again to our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. At this point, Jennifer, we would like to open the line for a live question and answer period.
We'll move forward to our next question, which will come from Suman Rabadugu with Altel Communication.
Hey, hi. I would like to know whether we can change a cluster name. So when I tried to change the cluster name, it changed the cluster name, but the cluster members went into an unknown state. So can we really change the cluster name?
Yeah, I would like to address this question. So you are asking for, is there a way to rename the cluster name, right?
Yes.
Unfortunately, it is not possible. Once you create a cluster and its members, you will not be able to rename any of the cluster members or the cluster itself. The only way would be either you need to remove the entire cluster and recreate the cluster.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, unfortunately, there is no way available to rename existing cluster names.
Okay.
Is that answered your question?
That's good. That's what I was looking for.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. We'll move forward to the next question, which comes from Lokswara Dadi with the state of Wisconsin.
Hi. I was calling regarding to find this is related to WebSphere 602 fix pack 23, and we have seen some weird issue. I just wanted to check or looking for some info on the info center and other places, but I think this is a good time. What happened is, like, we have two profiles on the system, which is AX 5.3, and when the system got rebooted, intentionally we have started the node agents and then started the app servers consecutively. And then when all came up fine, one of the node agents is not getting a proper syncing. So I was thinking, in this case, do we need to really do a synchronization manually or full synchronization to make sure that the configuration is syncing both from a DM and the node agent?
Hi, this is Randall. I can address that question. Yes, normally if you're seeing at any time with any of the versions, if you're seeing issues with synchronization where it appears that the nodes don't appear to be synchronized, then yes, the best thing to do in these sets of steps, and I can post this in the group chat, is to completely shut down the environment, right? Stop the application servers, stop the node agent, stop the deployment manager, and then do a little bit of file cleanup. You can remove some of the files in the temp directory and the WS temp directory, which is kind of used for caching and staging areas. And sometimes if the environment is out of sync, it can be reading some stale data from some of those directories. So you want to remove that data there. And then you can start the deployment manager. And then before starting the node agent, you want to do a manual sync node, right? You do a manual sync node, and then you kind of have to do this systematically, right, to make sure that after you started the deployment manager that there are no errors in the logs, right? That's kind of a sanity check if you do this one step at a time. So you start the deployment manager, make sure there's no errors in the logs, then you run the manual sync node command. You can usually give it a dash trace parameter, and that will show you the output from that into a log file, and then start the node agent and make sure that there's no errors with the node agent starting up. And then at that point, you should be able to log on to the console to see that the node agent is now synchronized and that the node agent is started and the node is synchronized. If not, then that's where you should first start debugging. If you go that far, even before starting application servers and things still are not in sync, then you need to debug from there. But if everything is synchronized at that point, then you can go ahead and start the application servers with a pretty good high level of certainty that it's going to start and everything's going to be fine.
Okay. Yeah, I thought having multiple profiles, there could be something else to look, but that's what we did step by step as you described. Thank you.
Okay.
At this time, we have one question remaining in the queue. As a final reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. We'll now take a question from Satish Kandamuri with IBM.
Hi, this is Satish, and my question is, like, we are using JDOM scripts to do the deployment, and actually we don't play script which will do the deployment, and but it is failing for some applications, and it is working for some applications, and it is saying that some Java testing issue, and I want to know more about this, like why it is happening in 6.0.
So if this is Randall, I'll take a stab at this. So if I understand your question correctly, you have some Jython scripts that you've put together to run in an automated fashion, and it's deploying an application. Is that correct?
What we did is we wrote a JSON script which will get the input parameters from a file and do the deployment. But it is working for some applications, but it is failing for most of the other applications, saying Java casting issue, Java casting error. But exactly, I'm not a developer, and I don't know what that error means.
So have you tried this deployment just on the command line, and just for sanity, to make sure that just doing a simple wsadmin deploy on the command line works fine?
Yeah, it is working fine.
Okay. If at that point, then you may need to turn on some tracing or some debugging to kind of see what's happening at that particular point. This may be something that you may need to open up a problem management report for, or open a PMR if you have support for that particular version of the product, and have someone take a look at it. It would be kind of tough to debug over the phone without seeing any logs or to know a little bit more about exactly what's going on there.
Okay. Can you please let me know what kind of traces I can enable to get more details?
There is a must gather. I'll send you a link here. Let me get the proper link here, and give me just a few seconds to pull this up, and it will tell you exactly what you need to enable for a WSAdmin problem.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question will come from Bert Simon with MetLife.
We have some applications that run, some of your files that run using Launch Client, and we also have applications that run directly from being mapped to application servers. Now, the ones that are mapped to the application servers can take advantage of the JVM custom properties we've defined, and as we have various environments with the same application, but some for development, some for testing, some for production, we try to keep it all consistent. One of those challenges in keeping it consistent is having those custom properties accessible to the applications that the ER files that launch using Launch Client. The only way we found to retrieve those properties is if the ER file is running on the application server at the given time, and we grab those properties from the PS output, but we know that's truncated at 2K. So is there an IBM solution for this?
Okay, so your question is, you have applications that run using Launch Client that don't seem to take advantage of your custom properties that you have set on JVMs where applications are mapped. So,
right.
I'll try to answer your question. My name is Vikram Thomendra. Hi. Basically, any custom property that you set on the application server JVM, which is part of a Sphere cell, so any custom property, any JVM custom property that is per JVM, I understand that you are trying to make use of that JVM custom property whenever you run this launch client, the scripting tool, right?
Right.
Basically, yeah, there is an option available. So, if you have a custom property set on the application server JVM, you cannot use directly that JVM custom property available to your launch script. But whenever you launch your launch client script, there is an option available, like, you know, the flag name is dash JVM options, where you can pass in your JVM custom property. So that whenever you pass that JVM custom property to this launch client using that dash JVM options flag, your launch client will be able to use that JVM custom property.
And we have an example on the Info Center. Ken Ganesh is going to post that link to the group chat for you so that you can get right to that example on the Info Center.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Jerry Carlin with Bank of America.
Hi. You know, we're unfortunately not on WebSphere 7 yet, and so while I'm interested in the JSON script library, I'm wondering how compatible it is, if I could get maybe a test copy of 7, if that could actually be run from a 6.1 environment, or if there's any other sources for similar things in 6.1.
Unfortunately, there are not, right? What we've been recommending is it's kind of you have to take a look at the particular JSON command in 7 and then just try it on 6.1 to see if it will work. For the most part, it will, unless it's addressing some of the new features in version 7, such as the job manager or the, you know, admin agent. As long as you're doing some of your basic server management functions, those same commands, JSON commands, should work. That maybe is not listed in the version 6.1 Info Center, but you can find them in 7, then that should work on 6.1. You shouldn't have a problem doing that.
Okay, well, we'll give it a shot. Thanks.
Yep.
Okay, we'll go ahead and move to our next question. That will come from Walter Kosinski with Auto Owners.
Yes, does the rollout update feature cause the servers to be restarted? And if it does, why and how do we overcome this limitation?
Especially when you use this rollout update operation either from console or using the WebSphere scripting tool, this option is more of useful, especially when you have a cluster with more than two cluster members that are spanned two different nodes, which means whenever you do this rollout update operation, by default what it does is, as soon as you deploy the application, before you call that save operation, when you click on this rollout update button in the administrative console, it saves the configuration, your application update information, and then it stops all the cluster member on one node. Let's say if you have two members on the node 1 and two members on the node 2, we do stop all the members on the node 1, and then we synchronize changes by updating your application on the node 1. We restart all your cluster members, and then we move to the secondary node. But by default, as per design, yeah, we do stop all the cluster members on the node 1. Since you have the applications running in a cluster, even when we stop the members on the node 1, you still have your application running on the node 2. So your application is not down. So you have your application is available to continue serving your incoming requests. But again, it depends on the operation you are doing. For example, starting from 6.0.2x, you have like various options to perform this application update operation, like partial update, full update, or single file update. So if, for example, if you do like in a single file update or only partial update, we just restart part of that application. But especially when you use this rollout update operation, so we're gonna stop all the cluster members and restart the cluster members. So there is no other way to prevent, you know, stopping the cluster members.
This is Preston. I would also like to add one thing here. Because they do get restarted, we often get the question of if a customer can set the order of which they restart. And the answer is no, that it is random, and we can't specify the order of which nodes get updated with the restarts first.
Is that answered your question, or do you have any follow-up question?
Well, I guess we use application servers that share multiple applications. So I guess restarting one while, I guess if it's in a cluster, it takes out all the other applications running in that server, too.
Right, right.
I thought I saw a tech doc somewhere where you could do more of a non-destructive application cycle.
That is correct. Basically, especially to use this rollout update operation, it assumes that you have only one application running in that specific cluster. So that, you know, when we stop the cluster member one, so you have your application running on a cluster member two on the secondary node. If you have multiple applications running on the same cluster in the same members,
as long as they're deployed out to the whole cluster, it'll still work.
Right, right.
But if, like you say, if they're only on one specific node or server, then that's going to pose a problem when they do restart.
Right.
This is Ganesan, and I'd like to add one more point. Actually, as long as you have other nodes, multiple nodes running, and this rollout update is not going to cause any runtime issue for the end user, because the end user still they are going to come to the application with the different nodes. So if you have multiple nodes and a cluster across that, cluster member across that node, then it should not affect your the application at all. And because the end user, they don't have any idea what's going on in the server side. So they should take care of that. That is the fundamental of the rollout update. We are not going to stop all the nodes at all. We are not going to restart all the members at the same time.
Great.
And we'll go ahead and move to our next question. That'll come from Scott Strange with Ernst & Young.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I was wondering, I know there's some good articles in the Info Center about changing the Windows computer name and or the IP address of a node. But I was wondering if anyone has had experience with doing that, and also in particular in both base 6 and 6.1 installs and network deployment clustered nodes as well.
Hi, this is Jerry Wall speaking, and yes, to answer your questions, there are best practice available for version 6. The best practice is only for the 6.0.2, but the 6.1, the Info Center has documented regarding the configuration change, and there are a couple developers articles that has a script already pre-laid out for making the config change for the version 6.1 as well as version 6.
Okay, yeah, I've seen some of those resources. I was just wondering if anyone has had experience doing it, if there was any gotchas to be aware of, or if it goes as smooth as it looks like.
I would say 95% of the times, I think the people has run into very smoothly. You know, there are a few cases where, you know, they run into some problems, you know, but they usually open a PMR to resolve it. So I think that the percentage-wise, very low, I would say.
Usually what I've found, if anybody ever does have a problem with it, they usually have just missed maybe one of the steps in the document. So if you just are really careful to follow each step, I think you will get through it without a problem.
Okay.
Question from Asha Mishra with IBM.
Yeah, hi, I'm Asha Mishra. I'm placed at Banco Montreal. I have a question regarding synchronization when we have global security enabled. I've noticed at times that when we stop and start deployment manager, we get a message saying, okay, there is some new certificate and new signer available, and do you want to add this signer to your deployment manager key store? Now, should we take that action at that point, say yes, or should we do another way of synchronization?
Hi, this is Ganesan, and so your question is, when you do the add node, you get a response back saying that, do you want to add the new certificate? And the answer is yes. Like, during the add node process, deployment manager and the node agent, they exchange the certificates. It happens automatically, and you get prompted for that. So please go ahead and accept that certificate, and that makes the communication smooth, and then it will process further. And so that's a default behavior,
and you, yes, please accept the certificate.
But will that add to, like, will that propagate to all the nodes, or is it only going to be applicable to that one node?
Actually, what's happening is you take one node and then you connect with the deployment manager, then the certificate from the node agent, it gets added to the deployment manager file. And the same way, like the deployment manager is going to exchange the certificate. So it is always deployment manager and one node.
Okay.
Right, and it would be available for all the nodes, for all the nodes there, unless you're doing node-specific security, which is not the default, right? The default is the cell-level security. So as long as you have the cell level, then you should be okay.
And an example for this, if you're going to a secure website, a lot of times you might get prompted for accepting the certificate. It's the same exact thing, node versus D manager. It's just asking you to accept that certificate.
Okay, thank you. I have just one other question. When we have, this may or may not be fall in your arena of administrative area, but when we have multiple WebSphere installs on the machine, does WebSphere have a mechanism of handling port conflict across these multiple installs?
In WebSphere 6.1, when you go through the install, it usually detects if you have another version of the product installed, right? And it will usually by default put the port number plus one, right, such that there are no conflicts, right? It'll usually tell you what the default is, and if it senses that there's another installation there, it will normally increment all of the port values by one, right? And it gives you the option to, maybe you don't want it to be that or you want to set it to something different, but it should do that for you such that you don't have any port conflicts. So I know we didn't have this functionality in 5.1, and I don't remember if we had it in 6, but I think we do have it in the 6.1 installation.
But only at the install time? Is it also true at the new profile creation time?
Yes, at the profile creation time as well.
Okay, thank you.
This is Ajit. One thing I would like to add is it doesn't check the cross reference, you know. So if you have a multiple vManager or multiple environment, it doesn't do any cross checking. It only checks specific to the single environment.
Well, yeah, that's the question I was asking. So you can have conflicts across installs. This is the question I was asking.
Right.
And is there a recommended way of managing this?
It would be probably a feature request.
Okay. Okay.
The previous questions that you asked, there is a script called Retrieve Signers. I would recommend use Retrieve Signer as a best practice. And when you do get a prompt for signer exchange, you always want to check the digest so that way you are sure that you are accepting the correct certificate. You know, you do not want to accept the unwanted stuff. You know that can also create like maybe a security exposure, like a hacking to the systems. You know, so I would suggest as a best practice always look at the digest, what you are importing, what you are accepting.
Adi with State of Wisconsin.
Oh, hi. Sorry. I have a question regarding the Jython scripting. We have an infrastructure that we support scripting at enterprise. Span between 5.x version, 6.1, and we are also going to test in 7.0 between Windows, AX, Linux, which is SUSE and Red Hat. The question that I have is we are doing a pilot right now and we are going to go for production in June. So multiple customers are having, I was been asking that. So when they try to deploy a EF file, they have a pretty much a user interface. They schedule, deploy that EF file. So that falls and comes into the deployment manager. And then I'm having difficulty in validating that EF file, like the compression, whether it is a corrupted EF file or we do first time the installs as the question number two, deploy with no error, but second time installs we do using this infrastructure. But what happens is if they include any of the new modules like web module, connector module, EJB module, or new data sources, or any new web services. So I just use the update existing bindings. So I have these two issues. One is validating the year file. It's a compression level like validity. I'm looking at year expand or shell script or jar file, but I thought of you might have a best practice on this to do. So these are the two issues I have in the JSON side. Is there something that I can do better way? The year validation, and then how do we make sure that when deploying is going through in the automated deployment fashion, how do I address the new bindings when I'm using the existing binding? Is there a flag that I can set for in my script?
To validate the year file, before you deploy, you can run the year expander, which I think you mentioned, and that will properly expand the year file if it's valid. If it's corrupt, it'll tell you that the year can't be opened or the year is corrupt. And then what was your next question?
The next question is we install this year file the first time as manual, and then second time we use the WSFN process to get installed. But if any, we tell the customers, like, let us know, because we are doing update existing bindings, which is an update, but if they include any new modules or like EJB web or connector modules, or if they have any new data sources, it won't bind to the existing cluster members. So is there a way that I can use in the WSAdmin script to join a flag so that also take the new bindings to map to the existing cluster members?
Hi, this is Ganesha. And so your question is, the application is already installed and it's running fine, and the developer comes with the new jar file, new model, and you want to update that application.
Yes.
So in doing that process, and so do you want, actually, like, the update is what happened internally, it uninstalled that application and reinstalled the new thing. And if you are going with the partial update or few file or a few model update, then it's going to work differently. But bottom line is, we uninstall the application and we reinstall. So during the update, you can pass the same command that you used for install. So if you look for the WSAdmin install or update command, it's pretty much same. And so if you want to pass any binding information during the update, that's possible. And once again, I want to make it clear, it's kind of a uninstall and reinstall. So that should help you.
Yeah, I know that it is pretty much an uninstall and install, but we manage like hundreds of applications, and when we delegate these for pre-production environment, I cannot keep track of who is adding what modules, and I cannot manually add those. We have like 5 scripts which manages these 100 applications. We manage a config.xml file for each app, just like IBM internal, the way that they are doing. So this is kind of giving a big deal for me, because when any app comes into, when they add new modules, we tell them that, okay, please let us know. We have to manually deploy that to overcome any errors. But I cannot do for all hundreds of applications that we manage for different agencies across the state here. So my problem is we do existing bindings update. I know which uninstalls and installs and keeps the existing bindings. When any new module comes, there I get the problem. So, like, some customers tell us that, okay, we have new bindings, okay, deploy it manually, but some, they forget it. So I think there should be a flag to take new and existing bindings, right? Will that help this to have any new bindings to bind to my existing app servers instead of I'm choosing just the existing bindings?
Yeah, there is a flag, and after this question, I'll get that information, I will post on the chat. Yeah, it is possible. Yeah, you can open the bindings, it's possible.
It is new and existing bindings rather than the existing bindings.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
The last one I have is, we have some issue recently on production environment. This is related to Windows 2003 server, WebSphere 5.x version. So the problem is we have created the JVMs as Windows services using the WAS admin service, and also we had a monitoring policy within the JVM process definition. so there is a conflict in the port because both are trying to start the same thing because the Bootstrap server is getting stopped. So then we stopped the monitoring policy and getting the Windows services as a JVM to start up. They are working fine. But I'm not clear on is both are the same, what they do, or is there a little difference between a monitoring policy within the JVM process definition for the node versus the service that I create in Windows using the VAS admin service?
So, okay. Yeah, this is Vikram Tomandro. So you are saying that, yeah, there is a monitoring policy setting available on each application server, as well as you can restore node agent as well as application server to the Windows service process. So do you have your application servers registered with the Windows services?
Yes, we do.
All right. The recommendation would be you need to have only the node agent process registered with the Windows services.
Okay.
Since you have the monitoring policy is enabled on the application server, let's say whenever you have just node agent registered with the Windows services, as soon as you start the node agent, it's going to start all your app servers automatically.
When I have the monitoring policy for each JVM?
That is correct. It's just one-time setting. You need to, you know, log into the console, or you can edit server.xml file to turn the flag.
Okay. So then in related to that question, when my Windows system is going down, patching, Microsoft patching, when it is coming back again, at the time when it goes down, sometimes Windows kills the processes the way it does when it is trying to stop the JVMs. If it is not able to, it stops. Then if it has stopped before the node agent process has been stopped, then the node agent process marks, I believe, that server is being stopped before. So the previous state for that JVM is stopped. So when the node agent is coming back again, and by looking at this JVM policy, what happens? Because that server JVM policy should be supposed to be started before, but Windows service has killed that policy.
Right. In the monitoring policy setting, you have three options: running, previous, and stopped. By default, it's previous. If you make it running, doesn't matter when you reboot the machine, or if, you know, when you have some Microsoft patch applied, your machine gets automatically rebooted. So during that time, node agent comes up automatically, then it will start all your application servers since you have monitoring policy set to running. But if you have previous, yeah, it just takes whatever the status of that application server before node agent goes down. So you may have to check that monitoring policy setting whether it is set to a previous or running.
So it is good to keep running rather than previous so that if this happens.
Right. So even if sometimes if your machine, entire machine crashes, if you have your node agent service in the Windows services tab set to automatic, so when the machine is rebooted, your node agent comes up automatically. Since you have the monitoring policy set on the application server with the running, node agent starts all your application server on that node automatically.
Okay. So this is the recommended way of doing instead of the Windows services, right?
That is correct. Especially you do not have to add your application servers to the Windows services.
Okay. So, but is both operations are similar, like the same, like starting from the services and starting as a monitoring policy, is they both do the same thing?
No, it's completely different. Monitoring settings, that is something part of the WebSphere app server, whereas the settings, you know, when you add the app server or node agent to the Windows services, it is the responsibility of Windows services.
Oh, okay. But I mean to bring up the JVM, they both do the same thing.
Right, that is correct.
Okay.
And it's actually not supported to start an application server in a network deployment version via a Windows service for that exact reason. In a base environment where you only have your application server, that's the only time you want to use your Windows service to start the application server itself.
Oh, okay. Okay, got it.
Okay, our next question will come from Romulus Lucis with Bank of Montreal.
Hi, I have a question. I was looking at starting with JITOM scripting and using this to install, uninstall, and start some application in 6.1, WebSphere 6.1. Is there a kind of a path in terms of learning this? And I'm referring basically, and not necessarily to the Python language, but to the correspondence between, you know, commands and objects in WebSphere? How is there some kind of a map or some kind of a way to depict this kind of correspondence? So it will be easier to understand what's the object, what are the properties, how to, what can you do on the object?
I would suggest, this is Randall, I would suggest using the either the interactive mode that comes with WSAdmin or using the help feature. And let me kind of give you a simplistic case. All right, let's say you find one of the commands, you have command assistance turned on in the console in version 6.1 for starting a server, right? And it gives you the WSAdmin command for that, right? I would suggest, you know, try it in WSAdmin, I mean, in the admin console, and then, or make a config change in the console, and you can see where or what file is being changed. When you do the, right before it prompts you to save, it says, do you want to review the changes? And you can see which XML file is changed. Make a note of that. So, for instance, let's say it's server XML, if you're adding a generic JVM argument, and it adds something there. Then go to WSAdmin and try to duplicate the same thing using the commands, right? And you can, there's a really good article I'll post in here in the group chat that will show you how to do things like to get the help to understand what are the properties that can be called, and you'll see which files are being changed at that time, that I think would be very helpful. There are some commands in 6.1 before 7.0 came out where this is what we had to do. We would get questions about, you know, they wanted to do such and such task. Well, there may not be any information there in the info center. The only thing that you have in the info center is the reference APIs for a particular object, which tells you everything that it takes and how you can call it. But you have to go in WSAdmin and actually, you know, play around with it to see what are the properties that you can change, what's required, what's optional. So I suggest taking that approach. It tends to, if just from a learning perspective, help you understand how the objects are being modified and what different properties you can set on the objects.
Yeah. Hi, this is Ajit from Level 2 Support as well. Yeah, I think to get more object information, I would recommend use a JMX API. The Info Center has a documentation, as well as when you install the product, I think one of the directory structure has all the API listed.
Okay, thank you.
We'll take a question from Gary Wagaman with SAS.
Hi, this is Gary. I have a bunch of scripts that do the creation of a node, which includes, of course, the add node, and it also does customization of that. So I also do WASAdmin commands to do the creation of the bus and create alter the JVM options and the web container options, etc. In the final step, I try to do a full resynchronization using some Jython code that I have that does the refresh repository epic to force a full resync. I have admin security turned on for the DMGR, and that particular full sync fails because it doesn't pass the credentials through. Is there any recommendation here? I mean, I don't want to shut the node agent down to do a sync node command. I'd rather do the WSAdmin method that I am using, but it fails because it doesn't pass the credentials on.
So you're saying you're trying to do a full synchronization after an add node, but it's not passing credentials, and so it ends up failing your full synchronization in WSAdmin.
That is correct.
And are you specifying your user and password in the WSAdmin command?
It's actually, I've placed it in the SOAP client props.
Okay, you have.
And of course, all the other WSAdmin commands that preceded this function okay, and obviously they're getting the credentials out of the SOAP props. So I don't know why this one particular one either doesn't fetch them or doesn't pass it through during the synchronization process itself.
Was security enabled on the deployment manager and the node before the add node?
Well, the security is enabled in DNGR at the cell level, so it was enabled prior to the add node. So,
okay. I'm assuming what's happening here is you're connected to WSAdmin on the node, and so then when you're trying to connect to the deployment manager, now it's asking for the credentials. Are the credentials in the SOAP client props on the node property?
That's correct. They're actually
on the DMGR properties folder.
Yeah, they're in the both locations. They're in the node. This is on a separate machine. The node is being created on a separate machine, so there is no DMGR structure there. But the SOAP client props have been updated in both locations identically.
I think what's probably happening here is when you connect WSAdmin, it realizes that you don't have security on the node. So then when you're in WSAdmin, there's really no credentials yet. You're doing the add node, and you're in the same WSAdmin session when you try to do the synchronization.
Mm-hmm.
If then you open a new WSAdmin session after it's added to the deployment manager, that new session will pull in those credentials. Now the security is enabled, and it will pass them along. I think that's what your problem is.
All right, so you're saying that you think I should...
After your add node completes, you should open a new WSAdmin session to do the synchronization.
I do that, yes.
It's a whole new...
Yeah, I mean, it's a separate invocation of WSAdmin.
It's possible that the LTPA token's not propagated onto the node at that point, because if security is not enabled on the node and security is enabled on the deployment manager, then it's not going to synchronize because it's not going to have that LTPA token on the node that it needs in order to do desynchronization. So at that point, you've really got two options. Your first option would be to do the manual sync node on the node agent.
Which means that I bring the node agent down.
Right. And then your other option would be to actually disable security, add the node, run the synchronization, at that point enable security. So if you could do that all in your script, you'd be fine. You could disable security on the DMGR,
I can do. Enabling it again and using the right credentials is the issue, I would think.
Yeah, that's. I would suggest disabling security. It's not really a best practice to have security enabled on the DMGR and not on the node at the time when you're doing the add node. There's an Info Center article that talks about add nodes best practices for security considerations, and one of them is either to have it security enabled on both or disabled on both when you do the add node.
All right. How would I enable security on just the node, though?
I think at this point you'll still have the same problem because you'll have different LTPA tokens on the DMGR versus on the node.
That's exactly what I was concerned about.
So no matter if you have security enabled on both, without doing that manual sync node, you're going to have to disable security in that script right before the add node.
All right.
And then you can just simply re-enable it in the same script. So you should be able to do this all in one script.
All right.
Thank you. Unfortunately, we have run out of time and must conclude the question and answer session. At this moment, I would like to pass the presentation over to Randall for a summary of today's session.
Yes. First of all, we just want to say thank you guys for participating with the WSTC open mic. We want to make this as valuable and as plausible for you as possible. We hope that we've given you something that can help you in a forum that's interactive and addresses some of the specific things that you may have questions about that may be some of the biggest things preventing you from making progress on certain projects that you have or any of those type things. In particular, we've addressed a number of things today, from system management, admin console issues to scripting issues. So I hope that we've answered everything. I hope that it's been very valuable for you and beneficial, and I hope that we can maybe provide more of these in the future if you think that the value is really worth spending the time here. So, Vikram, do you have anything else that you'd like to add?
Yeah, I think you covered everything, Randall, and thank you for that.
Okay, Joseph, I'll pass it back to you then.
Thank you, Vikram and Randall, for a great summary. At this time, we will conclude the open mic session.